Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now two takes on free speech and hate speech in Europe and the U.S. Brendan O'Neill is editor of the British online magazine Spiked and a columnist for various other libertarian leading magazines in the U.S. and abroad. He's in New York to promote a campaign for unfettered free speech and to warn us of what has happened in Europe, where he says laws limiting speech have led to a censorious mess. Then we'll hear from Congressman Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn on a bill he is co-sponsoring to address hate speech and hate crimes here in the United States. Brendan O'Neill joins me first in the studio. Hello, and welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
So our listeners may be familiar with some of the laws in Europe. For example, the French law that bans Holocaust denial and other speech that questions the existence of crimes against humanity. So could you give us some other examples of European free speech laws? What's the landscape?
Well, yes, a few countries have laws against Holocaust denial and against denying the crimes of the Nazi regime. France, Austria, Germany, of course. And then there are a whole batch of other hate speech laws which have really come into existence over the past 20 years or so, which criminalise speech that demonises certain minorities, whether it's ethnic minorities, women, gay people, people of transgender identity. A whole host of minorities are increasingly being protected by what is referred to as hate speech legislation. And I think it's a real problem because it's restricting how people express themselves and the thoughts that they can put out into the public.
And did you write about a back-in-the-day example when Brigitte Bardot, the actress, was fined 30,000 euros, if there were euros then, for criticizing Islamic treatment of animals?
That's right. She's been arrested and fined five times over the past few years. And in
this is recent,
because she's become an animal rights activist now, post-acting. And one of her big bugbears is the fact that the Islamic slaughter of meat is, in her mind, cruel. And this is a good example.
What's that word? Is that a British-English word, bugbear?
Bugbear, yeah. It's the kind of something that sticks in her craw. Do you have that phrase either?
I don't think so, no.
Full of British phrases.
Save the bugbears.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's a good example of how hate speech legislation ends up criminalizing political speech, moral speech, religious speech. Because in Europe in recent years, we've seen Christian pastors being sentenced to a month in prison for criticizing homosexuality in their own pulpits. We've seen pastors in Britain being arrested and spending a night in jail for saying that homosexual sex is a sin. We've seen Brigitte Bardot fined for criticizing Islam. Now, these views might not be particularly nice, but they are simply strong religious or moral views, and they've been demonized under hate speech law. We need to remember that one man's hate speech is another man's passionate conviction. So if we criminalize the expression of hatred or unlikable views, then we're going to end up hampering people's freedom of speech.
And Europe and most European countries, I should say, country by country, don't have the kind of First Amendment that we do in the United States, the right to free speech as a constitutional guarantee. So you're here to what? Warn the United States against following Europe's lead on some of these things that's really done in the name of tolerance.
Yes, that's right. I think one of the most striking things about censorship in Europe today is that it's done in the name of tolerance. It's done in the name of political correctness, protecting people from offense, protecting black people, women, Asian people, all sorts of minorities from feeling offended or from being hated. So it sounds like a nice thing. I mean, who's in favor of hating ethnic minorities? Hardly anyone. So it sounds good. But the end result is there are two end results. Firstly, that it is deeply censorious and it stops people from expressing their moral viewpoints. But secondly, it does nothing to challenge real hatred in society. We've seen this in France. 20 years ago, they banned Holocaust denial. They are now a hotbed of the new anti-Semitism. Holocaust denial is rising and rising because when you push these ideas underground, you actually allow them to fester and to grow. So you get the worst of both worlds. People are stopped from expressing their moral viewpoints, and we do nothing to challenge hatred and racism in society.
But what happens when they're allowed to fester openly and publicly instead? I mean, the original Holocaust, came as that grew all these libels against the Jews in the 1930s in Germany.
Well, this is one of the great, most striking things about hate speech laws. The Nazis, the National Socialists, were tried under hate speech laws in 1920s and early 1930s Germany. A number of them were arrested and punished under early form of hate speech legislation in the Weimar Republic, particularly Julius Streicher, who was the editor of Der Strummer, the poison hateful anti-Semitic Nazi magazine. He was time and again punished for libeling the Jews, for expressing hatred of a race, and he was imprisoned. Not only did it not stop the National Socialists, it actually helped them because they could present themselves as victims and they could say that they were saying something really dangerous because the state didn't want you to hear it. That's the same effect we see with hate speech laws today. It allows people to pose as martyrs and victims. So if anything, hate speech laws helped the Nazis. It did nothing to stop them.
So we do have laws in this country, even though, as you're pointing out, the United States protects speech, including hate speech, more than most of the European countries. There is a line when speech becomes threatening, speech that encourages people to target African Americans or shoot up mosques or synagogues. And we do have a problem in this country with bullying. And that's rising online in, the still relatively new field of the internet. So do you draw a line with hate speech that targets specific individuals with harassing language or even groups in a way that implies specific threats of violence? There's a line somewhere, right?
Well, if speech has been used as part of a conspiracy to commit a crime, so you are speaking in order to plan a crime, obviously that is illegal and should be illegal. If speech is used in a situation in which it might give rise imminently to an act of violence, for example, if I say to you right now, go out there and smash that guy in the face, that is not a free speech issue either. But aside from those two instances, I think speech should be left unchecked. It should be free. And I think we should trust the public to know that when they read hateful content or read stuff that inspires them to hate certain groups, they're clever enough and big enough to be able to work out that it's wrong and that it's bad. The only way that you can really work out good ideas from bad ideas is by having full freedom of speech, by allowing the public to decide what is right and what is wrong.
But if you take that threat that you gave me, the example of, you go and punch that guy in the face. If you take it to one level back of abstraction, if we're sitting across from three African-Americans who might be in the newsroom on the other side of the glass from us and you say African-Americans should be punched in the face, hate speech?
No, see, I'm against hate speech and I'm against actually hate crimes. And I'll tell you why. Because if someone commits an assault, they should be charged for committing an assault, not for committing a hate assault. Because what happens then when you get into the realm of hate crimes, you get into the realm of thought crime, because you're punishing people not just for the physical act, not just for murder, not just for robbery or violence, but for what they were thinking when they did that. And that is truly Orwellian, because you're publishing what people's beliefs are.
So Congressman Jeffries, who's about to come on with us, has co-sponsored a bill to update a 1993 U.S. report on hate speech and hate crimes online. He's not calling for speech to be curtailed under the law, as I understand it. He has said that, quote, this legislation will mandate a comprehensive analysis of criminal and hateful activity on the internet that occurs outside the zone of the First Amendment protection, unquote. And I understand this is on your radar. So do you object to what the congressman will portray as an analysis of hate speech in the United States?
I do. I think if Congress wants to go after criminal activity on the web, that's absolutely fine. If people are planning or carrying out criminal acts, of course, that's the job of government to stop that. But if it's about hatred, I don't think it's the role of government to police emotions. And hatred is, after all, an emotion, because it's not a big emotion. It's not a clever emotion. It's not very positive. It's not very progressive. But it's an emotion. And as soon as we invite the state to police our emotions, our thoughts and our words, we are heading down towards 1984 territory.
Brendan O'Neill, editor of the British online magazine Spiked. He's here in the U.S. to promote the magazine's campaign, Free Speech Now, Warning of Free Speech Laws in Europe. Thank you very much, Ben.
Thank you.
And listeners, we want to open up the phones if you want to react to that, and we'll hear Congressman Jeffries now. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Congressman Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn, co-sponsor of the Hate Crime Reporting Act of 2014, which seeks to update a 20-year-old report on hate speech and hate crimes in the U.S. Hi, Congressman. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Tell us what you're proposing.
Well, in 1993, pursuant to a law that had been enacted by Congress in the previous year, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration authored a report studying hate.
You okay? You distracted there?
Yeah.
Something going on? Are you responding to somebody over there?
Yeah.
Are you with us? All right. Or is there a delay on the line? Sorry, everybody. Seems to be a little technical problem with the line to Congressman Jeffries in Washington. You got us, Congressman?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Sorry. So go ahead and pick up. You were starting to describe, before we got interrupted by, I guess, technical problems, the Hate Crime Reporting Act of 2014 and what you're trying to update from 20 years ago.
Yeah, so in 1993, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, pursuant to an act of Congress that had been enacted in the previous year, conducted a report where it just analyzed the use of telecommunications, then existent broadcast, television, radio, cable television, public access, commercialized mobile services, and other electronic media to look at the use of such broadcast medium to advocate for and encourage hate crimes as defined under the Hate Crime Statistics Act. Now, that's an important distinction because the genesis of the report was essentially designed to see if there was a nexus between activity on these broadcast medium and crimes pursuant to a statute that was on the books that prohibited violent action directed at individuals based on race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, and other prohibited categories. The study was then issued to Congress with a set of recommendations. Congress could then act or not act, but had information. We decided, Senator Markey and I, that given the fact that 20 years has elapsed since that initial study, that it was appropriate for the National Telecommunications and Information Administration to update the study to examine activity on all of broadcast, including the new medium of the Internet, and to make a report to Congress and so we can determine whether there's anything to be done or whether the information is useful in addressing situations here in the country.
And so, for example, you've pointed to the shooting at a Jewish community center in Kansas in April as an example of a hate crime that hate speech can fuel. So what would this report, your bill, that allows an updated analysis, I guess, that takes contemporary online media into account, which the old bill did not, what would the bill do to prevent something like that shooting at a Jewish community center in Kansas? Anything, really?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that the starting point for any legislative action has got to be the acquisition of information. And so rather than respond to an act that has occurred, and in fact, Brooklyn unfortunately experiences more hate crimes than any other county in New York State, but rather than just respond to an act of violence, as often is the case in any legislative body, there's a reaction that is not necessarily the most productive legislative reaction. We thought that...
But it's already a crime to attack a Jewish community center. Why does it matter if it's also a crime to think, oh, those people are Jewish and I hate them?
Well, that's an important distinction because neither Senator Markey nor myself are actually advocating that Congress create a statute legislating against hateful thought. First of all, that would be inconsistent with the First Amendment. As the previous speaker indicated, I don't think that Congress is trying to legislate against any emotion. That would be outside of what the parameters that have been long established in this country. We've got a First Amendment. No one is going to repeal that. No one's going to change that. Now, in 1993, subsequent to the congressional report, it was information. Congress decided not to act in the context of legislating against so-called hate speech. The issue really is getting an understanding of whether these particular medium are being used in ways to facilitate a direct connection to violent acts, and then Congress can make a decision as to whether there's any appropriate action. But none of it would involve creating
criminalizing thought.
So
you've said this bill would evaluate the, quote, scope of criminal and hateful activity on the Internet that occurs outside of the zone of First Amendment protection. So elaborate on that. What kinds of activity or speech falls outside of the zone of First Amendment protection?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, we understand, based on what the Supreme Court has long since held, that one cannot advocate or encourage violent acts in the commission of crimes of hate as defined by statutes that exist in both state law and federal law. When that takes place, that is outside the zone of First Amendment protection. The example that's often cited, of course, is you can't scream fire in a crowded theater. We're talking about instances of advocating that an individual assault someone based on their race, based on their religion,
right,
based on their gender.
So I think we have some callers with examples of this that might be very clear for our listeners. Let's see. Michael in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning. Reverend Manning at the Ottawa Church, 123rd Street and Lenox Avenue, has the sign which puts up this hateful speech like, Jesus would stone homos. Stoning is still the law. And other egregious signs like this. We're going to go and picket on Thursday at noon because this is not freedom of speech. This is speech which will prompt people to act in a negative way. People will say, Reverend Manning and the Bible say this, I'm going to throw out my 14-year-old kid who tells me that they're gay. And the thing that's really horrible about this is the physical sign itself is in violation of the Landmarks Law. They've gotten violations, but the Landmarks Commission, afraid of a church, have not issued any fines. And so this terrible sign, which isn't even legal, continues to stay there blaspheming God and denouncing the president, saying, Obama has released the homo demons on the black man. Look out, black woman. A white homo may take your man.
So, Michael, I get it. And there's a, I guess, an instance, an example, assuming he's describing this accurately, Congressman Jeffries, where I guess we could ask, is that protected by the First Amendment, or is that incitement to violence against individuals, which would not be protected by the First Amendment, if there's a sign out there in Harlem that says basically Jesus would stone homosexuals?
Yeah, and ultimately that's going to be a decision that the courts make, and I don't think that any other body, certainly a legislative body or the executive branch, is qualified to adjudicate those type of disputes. But the most important point I think that the caller brings out is that society should know and be aware of the fact that this information is being put out there so that in the context of the battle of ideas, those ideas, as the caller just indicated, can be challenged, can be confronted, can be debated, and ultimately, when appropriate, can be denounced and proven to be factually inadequate or inappropriate in our society.
Here's
that
another.
All takes place within the realm of the First Amendment context, but absent the information, you cannot have a contest of ideas.
And Michael, the caller, is engaging in a contest of ideas because he said he'll be participating in a demonstration against that guy in the area where those signs are being held. So I guess a question for government would be, is that enough, which we're not going to resolve here. But here's another example, I think, from Jim in Point Pleasant. Hi, Jim. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Just the tone that's created by someone like Alex Jones on InfoWars. He's accused Senator Harry Reid of staging the murder of the two Las Vegas policemen as a false flag. I assume that's like a cover. But this is like Truthers 2.0. I mean, it's just bizarre.
So it might be libelous because it's demonstrably false and makes a serious accusation. I don't know if it's hate speech per se of the kind of bias thought that we're talking about here. But Congressman Jeffries, to wrap this up, I think you were hearing our previous guest, Brendan O'Neill, the British libertarian, who was here to warn the United States of what has happened in Europe with well-intentioned laws like people not being able to say that they deny the Holocaust in some countries and other kinds of restrictions on free speech. He says one of the products of that is that there are growing ultra-right Nazi parties in Europe now that we don't see in the United States. And he thinks it's, you know, at least to some degree, caused by squelching hate speech, pushing it down underground. And so it fuels these movements rather than letting people just vent. And then we speak back at them.
Well, the European model is very different than the American model. I think, Brian, as you pointed out, first of all, one of the core foundations of the Republic rests in the First Amendment and the opportunity for people to have the ability to express views, even though those views may be highly offensive, disturbing, inappropriate to the overwhelming majority of our society. Nothing will change that context in terms of how Congress proceeds or how any other governmental entity proceeds. But that said, I do think it's appropriate for Congress and for the public, most importantly, to actually be informed, to have information about the type of dialogue that may be taking place throughout this country. And then collectively, as a country, we can make decisions about how to engage that dialogue. It could simply be that it provides us with an opportunity to engage fiercely in the contest of ideas so that these ideas that are hateful are not being left unconfronted. It may otherwise be that in certain instances where there is a very close nexus between advocating and encouraging violent acts that then imminently take place, that there's a more appropriate role for intervention to ensure that no one is unjustly targeted in ways that could result in some of the tragedies that we've seen across this country.
So is your bill to update the study of hate speech online to include the modern, you know, expressions of the Internet? Is this going to pass easily in the House, or is this going to get bogged down in Democrat-Republican debate, similar to what we just heard between you and our Libertarian guest?
Well, we're hopeful that it does not get bogged down, although in this current climate that we exist in right now, almost everything becomes partisan outside of naming the post office. But, you know, that said, that by introducing the legislation, it has at least prompted a robust conversation in Congress and in other parts of the country about how to coexist in a society where we've got a strong connection to the First Amendment that will never be abandoned, but where the Supreme Court has said that certain speech crosses the line when it's closely connected to hateful, violent criminal conduct. And what do we do when we've crossed outside of the zone of First Amendment protection? The study is designed to provide information that then can lead to further debate and discussion.
Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from Brooklyn, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Brian.